From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2012 in Oregon, where an epidemiologist named Jonathan Snowden set out to learn more about home births. In Europe, home birth remains relatively common, 20% of births in the Netherlands, 8% in the UK. Well, in the United States, home births have accounted for only about 0.79% of all births in 2004. In the past decade or so, that number has risen to roughly 1.3%, fueled mostly by white women interested in having more control and comfort in their birth experience. Now, Snowden examined more than 75,000 births in Oregon, the state with the highest rate of home birth in the country. What his team found is that, speaking broadly, home births led to far fewer medical interventions, especially C-section. The C-section rate for women who planned to give birth at home was 5.2%, whereas women delivering in hospitals had C-section rates roughly 25%. But the rate of infant death was more than twice as high in home births in his study. In hospital deliveries, out of every 1,000 births, 1.8 infants died. Now, in home births, it was 3.9. Now, the study sparked a wide range of reactions. The New York Times published an editorial and declared, quote, "The debate over whether it's safer for a healthy woman to have a baby at home or in the hospital just tilted a bit in favor of hospital deliveries," end quote. But the authors of the study have been careful not to appear to take sides, urging thoughtful consideration for safety in whatever setting the mother chooses. This hour, we want to examine home births. We'll take a look at this study, and we'll talk about why, in the last decade in this country, we're seeing about 50% more home births. Not 50 percentage points, but about 50% more than a decade ago. So let me welcome my panel for the hour. Dr. Lorelei Thornburg is here, an OBGYN with UR Medicine. Dr. Thornburg, nice to have you back here. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
Michelle Bertner is a midwife and senior associate in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at UR Medicine. And every one of my guests, by the way, has long titles and multiple layers of titles. So, Michelle, nice to see you. Have I missed any relevant titles?
No, thank you.
That'll work?
I'm director of the midwifery practice at the University of Rochester.
There you go. Director of the midwifery practice at the University of Rochester. Also here is Allison Spath. She is a birth doula, and she is with the Rochester Home Birth Circle. Is that right?
That's right.
Nice to have you here. Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Amy Haas is here, a certified childbirth educator. And she is with the Rochester Area Birth Network.
That's correct.
So nice to have you here as well.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. And on the phone, we have Meg Grinrod, who's a midwife with Welcome Home Midwifery. And Meg is on the line with us as well. Meg, welcome to the program. Thank you for taking the time.
Yes, thank you very much.
Let me start with Michelle Bertner. You saw the study. We've been talking about this just from what we know about the numbers point of view. Does this study change anything for you and for what you expect midwives or hospital staff to be recommending to prospective parents?
I think it's good information that we haven't particularly had in the United States thus far. It's a very large volume study where they looked back at the birth certificate data about where women planned to deliver, where we hadn't really had data particularly like that. Oregon's pretty unique in that, as you mentioned, they have a very high home birth rate to begin with, also a very high midwifery rate, even women delivering in the hospital with midwives. It's also where I trained, so I've had exposure out there. And, I think this study particularly did a good job of trying to not address so much, is it safe to deliver at home, but really what are the risks when women do choose to deliver at home versus in the hospital or plan that. And so I think it gave information about that. I think that it talked about not only the risks of, to the baby of perinatal death, as you mentioned, being increased. And I think that's really important when counseling women and their partners about their site of birth, where they choose to deliver, of having a little more information to give them in making their decision. I think that it also does talk about the lower interventions when people do deliver at home, which we know that, but it sort of reiterated that.
Okay, and I should also mention as well that I know Michelle through my own personal experience, and Michelle and the great team, the midwifery team, we knew through the birth of our son. So I know Michelle through that, but it was also interesting that when I would tell some family members, I remember telling my dad, well, we're going through a midwifery group. He said, midwives, are you delivering like in a tent in the backyard? And I said, no, Dad, no. In fact, it'll be at Highland Hospital. But Michelle, I do think there is some misunderstanding among some of the population on what the word term midwife even means. And not that it only has one single definition, but do you hear that confusion sometimes? What would you tell the public the term means?
We definitely hear that confusion. I think there's misinterpretation about midwifery just from historical assumptions about what midwives do and where we deliver patients. Most of the deliveries in the United States by midwives do occur in hospitals. There are the, 1%, 1-2% of home births that are by majority of midwives at home. But many of our deliveries in the United States by midwives are in the hospital setting. And I think that the general public is learning that, but sometimes there's a lot of still misconceptions about that. And, for midwifery, the term means with woman. And so we tend to spend time not only in the prenatal setting, but in the labor setting, particularly also with laboring with our women and encouraging them, especially those who don't have a doula, for example, how to, birth their baby in ways that are not necessarily what they're, expecting in the hospital particularly.
Okay. Dr. Thornburg, this study, does it change anything for you in terms of the way you talk to prospective parents?
So I actually am not just an OB-GYN. I'm also maternal fetal medicine. So the patients that I see, I think it's important to talk about patients understanding their risk and understanding birth as a conversation between themselves, the provider that they've chosen, who they're then going to go on to deliver with, and developing that trust relationship. And the patients that I see in my practice should risk stratify out of home birth. And I don't think there's any home birth midwives that would disagree with me that they have zero interest in delivering the patients that I'm taking care of at home.
They're higher risk.
They're very high risk. So the patients I'm taking care of, the high order multiples, the triplets, the quadruplets, patients with prior preterm birth, patients with multiple C-sections, patients who are 400, 500, 600 pounds, patients with prior solid organ transplant, kidney transplant, heart transplant, patients with active cancer in pregnancy. These are patients who should not be delivering at home. And so we have to, when we talk about birth experiences and birth choices, what we're talking about with this study is helping women to see the data and to understand what's the right choice for them and what's not the right choice for them, and for making informed, educated decisions about those choices. So not just saying, well, I want a home birth, but understanding, is that the right choice for my risk tolerance, for my risk category, for what I want for the outcomes for myself and my child? Are those compatible with a home birth model? And so for me, it doesn't change where I'm going to deliver my patients, but it does add a piece of information that I think has been missing, because a lot of the push on home birth as a safe choice has been driven by the European data. And to compare the European data to the American data, where the Europeans have a very thoughtful, cohesive care plan for what happens when home birth is not go according to plan or when their interventions are needed, and a population that engages in medical care from a very young age in a preventative method with excellent access to education, medical care, right from a young age, I think it's very hard to compare our outcomes to their outcomes before, and this gives us a piece of information about what actually is occurring here in America.
I think there's a lot tied up in that response, a lot of different layers there, starting with who is certified. I mean, the European Union defines uniform standards for the education and training of midwives, whereas my understanding is the United States, it's sort of a, as the New England Journal of Medicine said, a piecemeal approach to the training and credentialing of out-of-hospital birth attendants, and maybe we can do better. I don't know. But and maybe that's a part of the discussion down the line. All right, let's keep going around the table. Amy Haas, this study, does this change any of your feeling? Does it reconfirm anything for you? What do you think?
Well, it shows us exactly what we've been seeing before, which is in the United States, we rely a lot on studies that are not necessarily well-controlled or well-constructed for our data. And that when we do look at the European models, the UK, Canada, and Holland, for instance, and the list of well-constructed, well-controlled studies that we do have that give us the good data, what we see are very definitive ways of determining who is and who is not eligible for a home birth. So they would be being low risk, choosing and planning to have a home birth, hiring a licensed birth attendant, and the last part is putting the transport protocols from home to hospital in place. This study doesn't change my opinion. It just reiterates the fact that we have more work to do. The good news is that in this area, particularly Rochester, we have three practices of licensed home birth midwives who are certified nurse midwives who can attend your birth. But again, you must be low risk. You must plan it. And you must hire that licensed birth attendant. And then we're going to be working in our community on that last point of the home to transport protocol. So what Snowden, which is this Oregon study, tells us is it simply points out the areas where we need to improve because we know what good, safe home birth looks like.
Yeah, and Amy, when I look at this study, I didn't see every layer of the study in terms of the circumstances for the several thousand home births that were studied. You know, for example, if the big number is that per thousand, there were 1.8 infant deaths in intended hospital deliveries versus 3.9 infant deaths in intended home births, what I don't know is, was it closer to parity if they were closer to the hospital, the home births, or if there was a better sort of a plan? Was there a way to get those numbers closer to parity? I don't know the answer to that. Do you have a sense that we can get it closer to parity through these better practices that you're talking about?
Yes. Determining infant or neonatal mortality is difficult across studies. When you look at all of the accumulation of studies that we have, you see a range of 0.5 to 3.5 per thousand births in both hospital and out-of-hospital studies. So, which basically tells us, in a sense, that when you're dealing with a low-risk population, it doesn't really matter where you birth. Chances of your baby dying are exactly the same. And I know people don't like it when I say that, but it's the way to go. The problem with this study is, the Snowden study, is that they used birth certificates to gather their data, and they're notoriously unreliable when it comes to being used for research purposes. So they don't identify all of the factors that you need to be looking at to really make that determination. We do have other studies that do give us more of that data. And on the Rochester Area Birth Network website, on the home birth page, you will see a list of those references and, in many cases, links to the studies themselves. I find you have to read the study. You can't just take somebody else's opinions on it. Although, if I have to give a reference to an opinion, go to Sense and Sensibility and read Hensie Goer's take on the analysis of four particular studies. She really did a great job on that.
Okay. The reason I find myself at least understanding the point of view of the New York Times editorial board is that this is an American study, which is important because the circumstances in the United States and Europe on home birth are different. And this looks at intended place of birth. You know, if you study home birth, but someone is rushed to the hospital and then there's an infant death, you don't want to classify that as sorry, this is the old cough. A hospital death. And all of a sudden Amy, my voice is totally gone.
I'm sorry.
The point of the question is, do you throw out this study entirely, or are you okay with
it? Well, you don't throw it out. I think it's useful, as I said, in pinpointing exactly where the United States needs to improve. And that is, we do need a process of making sure that the midwives have are registered or licensed, or we have some sort of continuity. Because some of the faults in Snowden, for instance, two were actually only delivered at home of the babies that died. So when you're saying it's higher rates, the rest were in a hospital setting. And so you can't necessarily say what the factors were in those cases. Did they control for emergency birth? Did they control for planned home birth death? Did they control for circumstances that were unattended? And as a matter of fact, the authors themselves talked about the fact that in several cases, the women were not attended by even a midwife. They were attended by a family member or somebody, you know, else who was present there. So we know that when we have those factors of an attended, certified, licensed midwife attending a birth that is planned for a low-risk woman, yes, home birth is safe. out of those parameters, not necessarily.
All right, but before I let the other members of the panel weigh back in, let me just make sure everybody has a chance to weigh in. Allison Spath, the birth doula, what did you make of this study?
Well, my one thought that I had was the study was conducted in 2012 and 2013. But licensure wasn't mandated for midwives until 2015. And so I wonder, you know, what kind of midwives were some of these women? Who did they choose to practice or to be their care provider? I wonder how that plays a role.
So that could account for some of the difference in infant death.
Yes. I wonder, like, who are these women who says she's a midwife? What's her training? How has she practiced? I wonder about that.
Okay. Meg Grindrod, midwife with Welcome Home Midwifery, on the line with us. What did you make of it, Meg? Go ahead.
Well, I would echo much of what other people have said. Information is always good for women. It's a basis of what I try to do in my practice with informed decision-making and informed consent. It doesn't change my opinions or my practice of providing home birth. Something that doesn't come out in a study like this and you know, doesn't come out immediately in conversation about home birth is that the great advantages for people that choose to do it of home birth in some areas that aren't measurable or quantifiable as easily in a study. That if you have a little risk, you know, a slight increase in the risk of something, but as a trade-off by being out of the hospital, you have a huge decrease in a much more common risk, like C-section, like disempowerment. I feel like birth and pregnancy is a time when people can be, when the woman and her family can be empowered to take control, to take responsibility of their lives, to make active decisions. And I think our world is crying out desperately for people who are empowered and in control of their lives. And one way that people can learn that and grow in that is by being able to make decisions about their care during pregnancy and birth and the care of their babies. And that's a huge advantage of not being in an institutional setting.
All right, Dr. Thornburg, I know you've been waiting to kind of weigh back in here. So go ahead, Dr. Thornburg.
Well, I do think we have to be a little bit careful because, I mean, there's a couple of things that came up. I mean, people shouldn't be choosing home birth because if I choose a home birth, that means I'll get to have a vaginal delivery at home without complications and with no interventions. We have to be very careful. Home birth and hospital birth, this is not an a la carte menu. You don't get to go and say, I want the vaginal delivery. I want to go into labor at 39 and 4. I want to have, you know, essential oils. I want to have, you know, my family around me. You don't get to pick those things. And so this study helps us to help women see the choices and what those choices mean and what those choices don't mean. So everybody wants a successful, beautiful vaginal delivery without complications with a healthy baby,
right? Not everybody.
Okay, not everybody. But most people want a healthy mom and a healthy baby, right? Like, that's everybody's goal. And everybody's trying to get to that in the way that they think is best for their family. So we have to be careful that by empowering people to make choices, we're not telling them that that they can make those choices in a vacuum. That they can make those choices without looking at the data, without looking at themselves, without looking at what it really means. And we want to be very careful that people aren't choosing home birth simply because they want to avoid intervention. That can be done in a hospital setting. It's certainly done with the midwives. It's certainly done in my practice. It's certainly done in many practices. And it's about having a trusting and valued relationship with your birth attendant, whether that's a physician or a maternal fetal medicine physician or a midwife or a, you know, a lay midwife, which is used in some areas in this state. And so we have to be careful that you're choosing it for the right reasons, not just because of a fear of something that seems uncontrollable. And so that we have to be careful with. I think we also have to be careful with this data because I hear a lot of times, well, these babies actually died in the hospital. That's still a home birth death. These are babies that you know, were unattended at home and delivered at home. That's going to happen if you have women who go into labor at home, even if they're planning to have a home birth and the midwife doesn't make it. Because that's part of the risk of having a home birth. There's going to be a snowstorm. There's going to be a flat tire. People aren't going to make it. So you have to accept that that's part of the risk.
And let me also just say, before my voice went into a desert, the point I was trying to make is what did change things a little bit from the perspective of this study was they looked at intended place of birth. So to what Dr. Thornburg is saying is if there was a death that happened at the hospital, but it was an intended home birth and something went wrong, it was counted as a home birth death in this study. Prior studies generally did not do it that way.
That's correct. And we have to be careful because, like, to say a patient came in after a complication at home with a demise, to count that as a demise for a birth setting in the hospital, it unfairly weights the data.
Okay,
we have to be careful.
But let me ask Meg a question that has come up with some of our listeners who are, you know, there's a lot of emotion in this. I mean, I could just read Twitter comments for the next hour. And here's a sample. I asked people this morning, when you hear the term home birth, what do you think? Greta says, dangerous, slightly crazy. Peter says, significantly decreased possibility of having a C-section or an infection. Steven says, pre-planned, comfortable, appropriately attended. Tim writes, a lot more comfortable than a hospital. Brian says, hospitals could learn about comfort from home birth. Home birth could be more friendly to evidence. Leanna says, scented candles and plastic tablecloths together at last. You know, and then here are the doctor comments from Twitter. Dr. Elizabeth Murray writes to us, I think of helplessness. If we had been there at delivery, maybe we could have helped. I fully appreciate my perspective is skewed because of what I do, but why risk it? The need for some interventions can be predicted, but often it cannot. Dr. Scott Krugman, listening in Baltimore, writes, I think of risk to baby. So those are just some of the connotations. They're all over the map. But one of the common questions we've gotten is this. Okay, if we're going to do it at home, what are the ways to minimize risk? And Meg Grinrod, let me start with you on this. Is there a distance that's too far from a hospital to be safe for a home birth? Meg?
Yes. Yes, there is. It depends on, I mean, there are certain pregnancies where certain distances from the hospital are clearly a problem. Mostly in New York State, it's not a question we have to think about because we have hospitals, you know, there isn't somebody we take care of who's not within half an hour of a hospital.
Is half hour the number for you to be comfortable?
Approximately, yes. Or half hour is a number to look at to say this is an increased risk and what are the benefits that you're getting for taking on this increased risk or what. But half hour is generally a guideline, yes.
Okay, and Allison, Amy, the same?
Yeah, I would agree. You definitely have to be able to ensure that somebody can get to the hospital within a reasonable amount of time. And when I worked with Meg on another project, one of the things we looked at was, you know, what specifically are the protocols that the midwives use to determine that? And I'm sure Meg can answer that question.
Okay. Go ahead, Meg. How would you answer that?
I'm not sure what the question is.
What protocols do you use to determine transport?
I'm still not sure what you're asking, Amy. I'm sorry.
Maybe under what circumstances you might choose to transport.
Yeah, when are we going to the hospital if something goes wrong? How do you decide? What's the plan going in?
It is the job of the midwife to be alert, not to, oops, we have an emergency, we need to go to the hospital, but to be alert to looking for possibilities of abnormality, for indications that things may be becoming abnormal. And that's the time to move. And if somebody, in one of the comments you read, things can come up suddenly, and when they do, then then you sometimes are transporting at that point.
Allison and Amy, have you had circumstances yourself where you've said, okay, time to go?
Yeah, my personal experience, I planned a home birth after two cesareans with Meg, and we transported for fetal heart decells. I live very close to the biggest hospital in Rochester, and my son was born 30 minutes after we arrived and all was well, but I was glad that the hospital was there. I was glad to have Meg monitoring my baby, and when it looked like something might be going wrong, she said it's time to go, and so we went. And
I don't hear anybody on this panel arguing for a hard line in no allowable interventions. And I think that's an important distinction, because sometimes there are stigmas. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes there's stigma even going through midwifery. I remember when this came up, where my wife and I were working with the strong midwifery group. And, of course, we didn't want intervention unless we needed them. But if we needed them, we wanted them. And we wanted them immediately. And, you know, those are, I think that's an important consideration. You know, Michelle Bertner, when you're working with patients and they're talking about, okay, we're going to think about a home birth, what do you start advising them on? You know, they talked about half an hour, making sure you can get to a hospital. Mm-hmm. What are the considerations you'd want them to have?
Well, I certainly think we have conversations all the time with couples and in women who are, you know, looking primarily, they seek us often for low intervention. They want to have that safety net of being in the hospital, and we can preserve that environment for them. And every once in a while, we have patients inquiring about, I might be considering a home birth. And it's all of those things that have been mentioned, certainly distance provider. And my top thing is, what is your risk? You really need to consider your risk and the potential for what can happen if you need to go, and what sort of risk you're willing to assume for both your health and for the baby. And so I think everybody has a different risk tolerance for those things, and that needs to be respected across, you know, all groups of people. And, you know, I think sometimes it's going over with people what their fears are, what do they think if they do choose to come to the hospital? And we, you know, are, as midwives that deliver in a hospital, go over a lot of that ahead of time to sort of, we don't want people to be afraid coming into the hospital, and how can we sort of diffuse some of that with couples that might be concerned about that? And I think every couple, every woman has to make the best choice for her and her family, and that's different for everybody.
Okay. Oh, go ahead.
I would like to add something.
Yeah, go ahead, Meg.
And that is, I want to be clear that home birth should not be cast and not be chosen as a way to avoid something. That's not a reason to have a home birth. Home birth, there are clear and profound benefits to home birth for people that want them. And home birth ideally is chosen for something, not to get away from something else. It's not, home birth is an alternative because I don't like the hospital and I want to get away from the hospital, that home birth stands on its own two feet, and there are reasons why people choose home birth.
And Meg, go ahead.
Another whole conversation.
Meg, go ahead and explain to listeners who are listening, saying, I still don't understand, why would anybody choose this? You know, because everyone's different. Some people, this is a natural idea to them. Some people have a hard time with this. What are the benefits, as you would describe them?
I can speak as a midwife, and I can speak as a mother who chose to give birth to my children at home. That it's a different view of pregnancy as a natural process, a natural function. That is rich and rewarding. It's an extremely intimate and private experience for a family to welcome a new baby in that kind of a setting. It's empowering. The number of times in my life, and that I've talked to other people when faced with something else that's difficult to do, when I've said, I can do this. Look what I did. I gave birth to these children, but I really, you know, that the mom really has a sense of her capability and of giving birth and of giving life to another human being. In a situation where you are surrounded by your own environment, we know that messing with, you know, laboratory rats when they're in labor creates complications in the birth process. When somebody is at home in their own environment, they're less likely to pick up an infection. They're less likely to experience delays and complications in the labor because they're being messed with. it's an extremely important time in the growth of people and their families. And it's a lovely thing to do it in one's home.
Dr. Thornburg, you want to weigh in? Go ahead.
Well, I think there's a couple things here. I think there's two things that strike me about that. I think one of them is that, yes, it sounds like there are many women who deliver at home who have a very great experience with it. But we have to be careful. Just because you deliver in hospital or you have a C-section or you had complications or you have, you know, a placenta previa where the placenta's in the way and you can't have a baby vaginally. Like, we need to be careful that all the ways of having a baby are valid and they're all empowering and they're all important. And it's okay if your birth process is not my birth process. Mm-hmm. My sister had a C-section and I had a vaginal delivery. And both of our children are alive and well and happy and healthy. And they are both valid ways of becoming a mother. And we have to be careful that we don't denigrate or elevate one way of doing this over another. And there are lots of women who come into my practice who really don't want to be in my practice. And let's just be fair, right? Like, nobody wants to say, boy, this pregnancy really is not going well, right? My baby's got this big anomaly. I got to deliver it strong. My baby's going to go to the NICU. I can't do skin to skin. He or she can't eat for 3 days after they're born. They're going to have surgery. Like, this is not the plan, right? Nobody says, like, that's what I'm going to sign up for. But to say, what pieces of that can I take back control of? What pieces of that can be important to me? And validate that as still a way of having good choices around a healthy birth for your child, not saying you're a failure as a mother and a woman because your initial plan did not go according to plan. So, you know, like in my practice, with moms with these complicated births, we sit down with their birth plans and we say, okay, this was your plan. Which things on this plan are not negotiable? Which things on this plan are sort of negotiable? And which things on this plan were like the wish list, like, you know, everybody wants to eat carbs and not get fat, but that's not reality. So, like, which things do I really want? And we can usually get it down to, like, this is really important to me versus this is just what I read sometime on the internet that I should want. And that's what I think we have to be really careful when we talk about choices in childbirth, that we make sure women are making them, again, like Meg said, not because they're afraid of something or to avoid something, but with the best available data and the best choice for their risk and their pregnancy.
Yes, and you and I couldn't agree more on that.
I
absolutely believe that same thing, and I believe that home birth is not for everybody. Some people because they don't choose it, and some people because their pregnancy doesn't choose it, because they're not low risk enough. But it happens to be my love and delight to provide that service for people. And I fully believe in empowering people to make whatever choices they want to make. You know, and I've had to, in my career, deal with it. It's just a funny little example of that. But if that's what I believe, and supporting people to make choices and empowering women through their pregnancy and childbirth experience, and then I'm taking care of somebody who says, you know, this is really harder for me than I thought it was, and I want an epidural, that it becomes my job to advocate for that just as strongly as I advocate for the person who wants a medication-free delivery, and that they're both legitimate, and they're both, you know, what's important is that they be supported to do what's right for them and what's right for their pregnancy. And I am not at all about espousing one approach to birth or one method of doing things. I'm about espousing that people should be allowed and supported to make choices.
I'd like to spend the rest of the hour just taking listener questions on this. We've got a wide range of questions on how certain things work, questions about home birth and the process. So let's get a very short break in and come back, and we'll get to your phone calls and questions that have been coming in as we talk about home birth right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, Thursday on the Next Connections. First hour, being Black and gay. The challenge in that community, especially when it comes to something called gender policing, we'll discuss it with our panel. Then in our second hour, Billie Jean King joins us, the former star athlete who's going to be headlining the upcoming Susan B. Anthony annual luncheon. We'll talk with her and talk with you on Thursday.
In Texas, licensed gun owners are now free to open carry, but many women still prefer to conceal their weapons, and that's created a demand for new kinds of accessories, from holsters to handbags.
I was interested in making something that really functioned, and yet looked as if that woman had walked into Nordstrom's or Neiman's or Marshall's.
Firearms and Fashion, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4. On WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and we've got a wide range of medical backgrounds here helping support your questions and comments on home birth, and that's what we're talking about this hour on Connections. Before I jump into the phones, here's just a question on Twitter, and just comes from a mom who just wants to know, how do they screen moms for preeclampsia after the baby's birth at home? I don't know the answer to that.
After the baby's birth at home?
I'm sorry. How do they screen moms for preeclampsia? Yeah, after the baby's birth is the question here.
Well, we look at their mom's blood pressures. I would imagine they do that at home just as well.
Shouldn't be an issue.
I would think not.
I assume home birth. This is a great question for Meg. Meg, yeah. Are you still on the line?
Yes, I'm still here. Yes, you're right. We do exactly the same thing you do. We check the mom's blood pressure. And check for edema and see how she's feeling. And yes.
Okay. Let me get to your phone calls. And first up is Keith in Geneseo. Go ahead, Keith.
I have an interesting show. And you guys actually answered some of the questions about, let's say, if there's a troubled birth and you start at home and the baby dies at hospital, that it is considered a definite birth. Question. Would you allow a woman who's never given birth to give birth at home versus a hospital setting? And from my point of view, being there when my three daughters were born, I basically wanted as much stainless steel as close by as humanly possible in that chance that something went wrong. But a lot of people assume that, okay, I'm going to have this birth at home, and if something goes wrong or if I'm having a problem, I'm going to call an ambulance. Well, guess what? There's not much we can do on an ambulance if you're having a troubled birth. So it just makes a bad situation worse because now you're waiting for an ambulance and you may not get one immediately. And you just create more of a difficult problem.
Okay, Keith, thank you. There's a couple of points there. I think it's important to revisit the fact that everyone on this panel is agreeing that not every single person who's pregnant should be told, yes, a home birth would be a good idea for you. There are certain women who are better candidates than others. Amy, what's the definition of a good candidate, for example?
Well, it can be a first-time mom, but she must be low risk. That means she can't have any pre-existing health problems, hypertension, diabetes, for instance. There are other things, but they're more rare. And the midwife screens carefully, and she monitors her throughout the pregnancy. And things may change as time goes on. So, no, a high-risk mom or somebody who becomes ill in some way is not going to qualify. The second is they have to plan it. It's a personal choice. And by that, we mean you can't just say, oh, maybe I'll birth at home or maybe I won't. You have to actually put a plan in place. And that plan has to include a New York State licensed birth attendant, which would be a New York State licensed midwife or a New York State licensed physician, although that would be rare. and, you know, you have to make sure that this is what this woman wants, because we've discussed this before. Doing something just because you think it's cool or it's popular is not okay, or just because you're afraid of something is not okay. You need to be doing it because you feel in your heart this is what's right for you, and then you need to work hard to make sure that you're low risk enough to do it, and that you need to have your staff in place and your support in place. And now the community's job is next to work on that transport home to hospital issue, because you've got your lifeguard, and now we need to get them there if there is a problem.
Would you ever say weather conditions change your mind on doing a home birth if it's going to be hard to travel?
That would have to be a question for Meg.
Okay. Meg, does that ever come up where you say, you know what, this is, these conditions would be very difficult to travel in an emergency, and I don't think we should do it at home?
That has not come up for me. We have discussed it with people sometimes. I've never had a situation where it didn't instead feel like the weather is kind of lousy. Better you sit tight where you are in labor, and I deal with the storm.
Okay.
Have you out driving around.
And first-time mothers, okay to do it at home if you're low risk, yes?
Yes.
If you look at the European data, right, the home birth advocacy stuff in Europe actually is more strongly advocated for the multiparous patient. The patient who's had a previously successful low-risk delivery at home, actually much more so than it is for first-time mothers. And first-time mothers are more encouraged actually to have a further discussion, and more of them in the European model deliver in hospitals. And then, so it's a, yes, it is possible as a first-time mom, but if we're really comparing apples and apples, the European data is multiparous women who successfully had had births before.
Okay. We had a question on what a doula is. Sometimes we get through these discussions, and I remember there's plenty of the audience who might be wondering. So, Allison, you want to explain what a doula is?
Yeah. So a doula is a woman who offers physical support for a woman who's in labor, emotional support, helps a family advocate for themselves and what they want, helps them ask questions. As a doula, I don't offer any sort of clinical care. I don't do blood pressure checks. I don't do anything medical. I'm there to help a family feel empowered, know what their choices are, help them answer their questions, and also provide physical support during labor.
Yeah, physical support. Like, for example, let's say you've got a posterior child who's, you know, mischievously not moving very quickly, and there's a lot of back pain, which is totally common. And let's just say, hypothetically, the husband is getting very tired of doing massage treatment. Then
yes,
the doula can switch off.
Yeah.
That's just hypothetical, not that I would know.
No. And a doula offers continuous care. So a doula can often join a family at home and then accompany them to the hospital and doesn't, where midwives and doctors are busy taking care of other patients. A doula's job is to be with the woman the whole time.
Yeah. Posterior is super inconsiderate, by the way. I just wanted you to all know that.
Can we talk about that backup plan a little bit? I think one thing we have
absolutely
to think about in the backup planning is, I think, again, we talk about choosing things not for a fear of something, but choosing things for when you've really thought it through. One of the things that often comes up in this conversation is cost. And home birth does have a decreased cost associated with it because you don't have the hospital costs associated with it. Actually, the attendant costs are very similar. It's the hospital costs that really drive up hospital birth. But if you're going to deliver at home, you need to not only have a backup plan of where I would go, how I would get there, how that would happen. If I get there, where do I go when I get there, right? Like, I don't just show up in the emergency room, as our caller pointed out. That's not a skilled birth attendant who knows how to take care of you if you get into trouble. You want to go to a labor and delivery. You want to go someplace they have 24-hour staffing. They have 24-hour anesthesia. I mean, you need to think about where you're going to go. You also need to think about, if I ended up in the hospital, how am I going to pay for that? And do I have insurance? Does my insurance cover birth in a hospital? So not to be surprised by that if it were to happen. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's an important thing that people need to think about, because I'm planning a home birth doesn't mean that I shouldn't, when it's open enrollment, switch over to a plan that would cover a contingency.
Let me get back to the phones. And this is Laura in Rochester. Go ahead, Laura.
Hello.
Go ahead, Laura.
Hi. So I just wanted to say that I had a home birth about 4 months ago, and it was amazing. Out of my 4 births, it was definitely the best birth experience that I had. And I just appreciated having options, birthing options and birthing choices that, maybe you don't have in hospital.
Okay. Can you elaborate?
So we did have the option, like, all of our children were at home with us, and they all, kind of participated in the birth experience in their own way. We have a 16-year-old, and she was our unofficial doula, and actually our midwives didn't make it to the birth, so my husband delivered. But again, it was a planned home birth, so there was no, you know, there wasn't a fear factor there as far as, you know, needing to get to hospital because we were birthing, because that was how we planned. And the boys were there, you know, kind of in and out of the room, and, you know, they got to meet their brother, you know, right away and hold him and just kind of, you know, just be a family and just kind of take it all in together at home. It was very peaceful and just.
Laura, happened? What happened that sort of prevented your midwife from getting to you?
Since it was my fourth birth, I went rather quickly. So with my third pregnancy, we barely made it to hospital for that one. So that was kind of another reason, you know, one of the many reasons that we chose the home birth was because, as far as laboring, I appreciate laboring at home. And then with the third one, you know, as soon as we got to hospital, I was ready to birth, like to push at that point. So, and actually I probably would have been able to push, birth him sooner had we stayed at home and not headed to the hospital with our third, but that wasn't our plan.
Did you feel at any point, I mean, as prepared as your husband is, and I think that's fabulous, to go into that process feeling like we're prepared, we've thought about it, we're ready for it, but to not have your midwife there, was there anything that concerned you? You know, what was your plan going to be if something went wrong?
So if something did go wrong during birth, like during pushing, we would have hopped in our vehicle and drove to the closest hospital, which for us would have been Highland. So we were probably maybe 15 minutes away, depending mm-hmm. on traffic. But I mean, there, you know, yes, we weigh the risks and weigh the benefits. For, you know, one of our many reasons for birthing at home was just we wanted that low intervention. I didn't want to feel rushed during labor. I didn't want, you know, the kind of, you know, some people want it, you know, want to be heavily monitored and they want to know, you know, the baby's heart rate. But, you know, these things change during the labor process. And I think that, I don't know, maybe one of the doctors can comment on this as well, but the heart rate will fluctuate like during the birth process, you know, because the baby's moving down and, you know, things are happening. And so I just, there is a lot of unnecessary interventions, I think, that happen in hospital. And there is, you know, if you need a C-section, of course, it's, you know, I think that it's not always about, yes, you know, now we have a healthy baby and healthy mother. It is about the experience of the birth.
Laura, let me just jump in and say, because there's a lot of other people who would love to weigh in as well. Thanks for sharing your story. I want to ask Michelle and Dr. Thornburg on the question of unnecessary interventions there. We've talked in this program about the goal of reducing C-sections in this country, not to zero, not to 5%, but to something less than a third, for example. And I think there is a general agreement out there that we need to do something, and doulas are a good way. There's lots of ways to start working that way down. There's a lot of evidence for that, which is great. But at the same time, as we say that, Michelle, do you ever feel like the comment there that you hear there, that you hear from a lot of people, which is there's too many unnecessary interventions? Is that too broadly speaking, or is that fair?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that, you know, in my practice, we tend to really minimize those interventions, but we also tend to have a lower risk population as well, even within the hospital. You know, I think you have to take all of it into context. I mean, certainly the places that have very high C-section rates, you know, might be, for example, places that deliver preterm babies and have a lot of high-risk moms. And so, you know, our practice of delivering over 600 women a year, our midwifery practice at Highland tends to maintain a C-section rate between 10 to 15% fluctuating on the year. And so there's a lot of factors in that, though. I can't extrapolate that to all OB practices. You know, for us, I think it's lower risk women. It's women who, you know, come to us and are active in participants in their healthcare. They might, you know, really want a physiologic birth, maybe want to try on medicated. We support that. We welcome working with doulas for couples who want that. And so, you know, we have protocols for intermittent monitoring in the hospital for women who are low risk. And so we implement that. And, you know, I think that it's different. And I think you can affect C-section rate with patient interaction in their care and also with what their risk factors are.
Well, let me just say 30 seconds to Meg Grinrod. I'll give you 30 seconds just to leave our listeners with an idea on home birth. In the wake of this study, in the wake of this discussion, what do you want to leave the audience with, Meg?
That home birth is a safe and viable option for low-risk women. That if it's something that people want, it's something they can seek out and find for themselves and is available in Rochester. And that there is work to do in our community, it can always be made safer. And the issue of transport and bridge between home and hospital is something that all of us in the community are currently looking at and trying to improve.
And you can find the Rochester Home Birth Circle on Facebook, as I did, to find Allison. So there's a lot of resources, and the Rochester Area Birth Network as well. So there's a lot of resources out there. Dr. Thornburg, we're short on time. Just some final thoughts here.
I think you just have to understand your risks and make sure that you're choosing something for the right reasons and that women deserve and get to be the deciders of their own health care, but they can't do that in a vacuum. They need good data.
Thanks for being here, Dr. Thornburg. Nice to see you. Michelle Bertner, thank you for taking the time. Thanks as well to the rest of the panel, Amy Haas and Allison Spath in studio with us as well. Amy, thank you.
You're very Allison, welcome.
Allison, thank you so much.
Thanks, Evan.
And on the phone, Meg Grinrod, a midwife with Welcome Home with Midwifery. Meg, thank you for taking the time for us as well.
Thank you, Evan.
And let me just say, I mean, we probably could have taken calls for the next hour straight. And the host hates to do this, but, you know, in the last 5 minutes, every line lit up. So if you didn't get through, we'll revisit this. These subjects are very important to whether you're a mom or not, and I think they're important to a lot of different people. So thanks for calling, and we hope to get more of that in next time. Thank you to Valerie LaBanca, the engineer of the program. Megan Mack is the producer. Marielle Brinkerhoff is our intern for the day. I'm Evan Dawson. Thanks for listening to Member-Supported Public Radio.